Welcome to the Mixing Light Podcast. I'm Robbie Carmen. Today's podcast is an interview that Mixing Light co-founder Dan Moran did with master colorist and trainer Warren Eagles. With over 25 years of grading experience and a decade of teaching color in a classroom setting as one of the founders of the International Colorist Academy, Warren provides a unique and interesting look into the world of grading.
We're on Beak Street here in Soho in London, and I've managed to convince Warren Eagles to come out on a nice sunny day for a pint. Nice to see you, Warren.
Good to meet you, Dan. How are you doing?
Oh, very good. So you're here for some training at the moment, I think.
Yeah, I have been running an ICA Resolve set of classes at Soho Editors, who are our training partners here in London. That was last week, and today I'm just visiting clients around Soho, where I used to work.
It's always good to catch up with people. Best place to probably start is what actually got you into grading in the first place? Like, what got you started?
Well, I started when I left school. I started working in photography, and I enjoyed that. And then moved to film cutting and projection. Then thought, well, I want to be an editor. I moved to a video post house and was an editor, just a junior editor. And then a chance came to do grading. I'd always liked film and handling film, so it seemed like a natural progression, but not one I ever thought I'd be doing for like 23 years.
What was it that actually attracted you to the grading side of things? Was it the technical aspect, or was it actually
It was a really good mix of mechanical things back then, because you had a telecine machine you physically loaded a film on, which you had to adjust to get the optimum performance for that, and then had to go to a control desk. Once you'd done the technical side of things, then you could get more creative. Obviously not as creative as we do now, but it was a combination of both, and just working on huge different genres of shows. Commercials, dramas, movies. I always like doing different things.
Do you say there's any mentor you had back in the day to get you started?
Well, I started a place called Visions, and the two colorists that worked there were guys called Luke Rainey and Mark Bohr. They were an influence on me when I was an assistant colorist, and my first actual job was on a Michael Jackson Bad concert, shooting with those guys. They shot 35mm. That was probably in 88, just before you were born. Well, you were definitely in short trousers.
Definitely, yeah. I'm an 87 baby.
So you were like about one then.
Yeah.
And so there was just so much film in that job. They said, look, Warren, you know, we need to go for a sandwich or something. They'd set the grade up and I would just go for it, and we'd lay the reel down the tape real time. And so I got a feeling from there, and then Clark Muller came to work at Visions. He now works, he's got his own shop in Los Angeles called Incendio, and he was ex-Company 3, and I learned a lot from Clark. He said, I'd train you, and you know, I became the junior colorist working under him for a couple of years, and that's where I really learned the craft of grading as much as the technical side of things.
So do you think, like, when people are starting out at grading, what would you say is the kind of the biggest mistake people go for? I mean, I think I've probably made them all, but
I find when I'm training people that they really want to get into secondary grading, learning the tracker, learning windows. They want to do all the tricksy things and putting on power grades instead of just doing a primary balance, getting the picture looking really good before you do any more. And I don't know if I harp on, but like when we started grading, or what we did a few years ago, that's all we did. You know, if you look at older movies, all before the year 2000, everything was graded in the laboratory, which basically means those guys had just filter levels of red, green and blue, and they would dial in different amounts of those filters called printer lights. You know, so these classic movies, you know, that we've looked at, like The Godfather, and obviously go back further, Lawrence of Arabia and Dr. Zhivago, they look beautiful. No one ever says now, oh, crikey, that didn't look so good, or that didn't work.
Yeah.
We just have a lot more tools now, but I think it was when you're starting out grading, is really get to know the primary tools first. Once you can just repeatedly nail that primary, then look for secondaries and how do I enhance that?
Yeah, that's something I've seen quite a lot as well. Like the main colorist where I work is Mark Horriban, and he would set a look using a couple of primaries, and then he'd say, okay, match it. And I'd come in with 17 nodes, and it would almost look the same. But I've twisted the picture so far where he's just gone in, you know, done about 3-4 nodes,
yeah,
and it looks better. So I think, yeah, going back to a more traditional approach is definitely the best way forward.
Less is good in terms of layers, and I see this a little bit more in Asia, where they do tend to throw lots of layers or nodes at things.
Yeah.
And you look at them and I might say, well, what is that one doing? And they'll say, oh, I'm not sure. Keep it simple, that's the tip.
Yeah. So is there any film that you've graded and you're particularly proud of? It's a loaded question, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, commercial film projects that you'd look back, even like the Michael Jackson concerts or...
Well, I did like doing that. There's probably two. There's a documentary called Found Sound by a band called Spooky. It's a director called Grant G.
Okay.
And he's done some really, did a lot of stuff for Radiohead back in like the 90s. And we spent ages doing this really wacky 16mm Bolex Super 8. Every trick in the book came out of the telecine in terms of your putting stuff in the telecine gate and wrapping cling film across it. Everything we did. But it was a really visual looking, like an EPK, a 25 minute, 4-track promo. And I still look at it now, I thought that was pretty groundbreaking for its time. And probably for a movie, because it's so well known, was Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
That's pretty cool.
Because no one at the time knew it was going to be a movie. Guy Ritchie had hardly done anything. Tim Morris Jones shot it. It wasn't a DI at the time, but we did all the deliverable, and we did a couple of DI shots for it as well. And that was a place called SVC, just around the corner from here.
I've heard a lot of stories about that place.
Yeah,
it sounded like it was a...
That was a good shop. There's lots of colourists who have been through there. It's now pouring down with rain, the sun has gone.
It's definitely London.
We're the only people now standing outside the pub. It's supposed to be July.
Definitely doesn't look like it. I think it might be best if we move inside.
Yeah, we might have to, yeah.
Okay, so we've managed to escape the rain and we've taken shelter in the lovely reception of Smoke and Mirrors in London. The main kind of thing I wanted to go on now is you've been quite heavily involved in DaVinci and Resolve for the last couple of years. Do you have a particularly preferred system, or is it just whatever you use to get the job done?
Yeah, I mean, I've used DaVinci probably exclusively for the last 10, 12, or 97 when I started working at SVC, was one of the only DaVinci houses in London. Everywhere else was Pandora, Pogels. And one of the things that attracted me to SVC, there was a chance to learn another system. And I always liked trying to learn new things and what was it like, and why did, you know, 90% of people outside of the UK use a DaVinci? So I learned that. And then when that sort of faded out, the DaVinci 888 went to a 2K, that faded out, and Resolve came in, I stayed with Resolve. I've used other systems, but I wouldn't feel confident I could go and sit down as a freelance colorist and be an expert on that system. Because one of the things I think, to be a freelancer, really you have to have used it in a staff position. You have to be really competent and know that software really well. And I wouldn't feel that if I went and did, you know, an encoder base like these others that I have used, but I just couldn't feel I could really pull the grade off to maybe how it should be. So as a freelancer, I'm a Resolve person.
Do you think the move from DaVinci to Blackmagic had a big factor in the freelance market? I mean, I think probably most systems now are Resolve, you know, kind of in a percentage style. Do you think that's affected the grading market and your rates? And
It did, but before that, Apple Color made a huge impact as well.
Okay.
That can't be, you know, underestimated in how that has changed the grading landscape. You know, because before that, like, color correction rooms were just places that, you know, you really got into unless you were shelling out, you know, your $1,000, £600 an hour to go in those rooms. People used to come in these rooms and go, wow, you know, I'm in a grading room.
Yeah.
Really?
And watch my money evaporate.
Exactly. You know, they had, you know, done to the nines and booze cabinets and everything. And because no one could afford to set anything up unless they were backed by serious money. And mainly, that was because everything was still shot on film. So you needed a scanner that cost $1 million to be able to do that. So that just tied it to big post houses. There was no boutique places. Color came along. Apple Color, which was obviously Final Touch before, and you saw a few more boutique-y places. People were getting a grade done. And people used to say to me all the time, Color, what's that like?
And some people always wanted me to say, no, it's rubbish, it's a waste of time. I actually used it quite extensively for about a year, doing commercials and dramas in between doing my Da Vinci work. And, you know, it did well for me, and I made money using it. It had its faults, but that was the real start of a breakthrough in the colour grading industry, I would say, was colour. Then, obviously, Resolve after that.
It's a good thing that it's opened up now. I mean, from my point of view, I was working in Ireland. There was 4 colour correction systems, and there was kind of 2 main guys. There was no chance of me ever becoming a colourist, ever. So I think I'm happy with Blackmagic for opening it up that way.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I heard Grant saying when I was working there, was Resolve is now for the talented people rather than the ones with deep pockets. Mm. So that's something I'll always take. So what's kind of the big plans for the ICA at the moment? Do you have any kind of main goals for this year?
It's just to keep delivering classes, really. It's not the sole thing I do. It this year, it's probably 40% of my work, 60% of my work is grading, mainly back in Australia, commercials or films. We want to, you know, strengthen our brand with diversity in our type of colourists that are on our roster, so we offer different type of classes. We're always looking at, you know, the possibility of expanding. Maybe we need an expert that knows speed grade, or, you know, we're always looking for someone who's a base light expert that can just, so we can cover everything.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just try and share some things, really. And it's worked well the 3 years that we've been going, so that's good. So when you were in Ireland, and did you ever think you could get a job as a post house and just work your way as an assistant? Was that an option?
No. It was, in a certain sense. I did it on a flame. So I was down the compositing route. It was tea room or tea boy, then it was machine room. Like, I did work the normal ranks, but I had to move to 3 different cities to get there. So I was, I was Dublin to Manchester, now to London. So I got there eventually.
It was really the only way in before. You know, you can now take your training classes. There's a lot more online. You can do things on your own, which is you couldn't do it. First ever training class I did with FX PhD was Da Vinci 2K.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and then we did 3 of the classes on a Resolve back in 2007. But at the time, that box was still $350,000. Yeah. So not many people had one in their bedroom that they could play with.
No, and that's how I got my job at Blackmagic, thanks to that class with you and Mr. Charlie Ellis. Yeah.
So you had to either, you know, beg your way into a post house who had one of these boxes and, do you mind if I sit here at night time and just play around, or you just took the techniques that, you know, Charlie and myself were doing on the Resolve or the 2K and then do it in Apple Color or After Effects or Photo or wherever you were grading.
Just when you were saying that you split your time between kind of commercials and film work, do you have any different approaches to a feature film?
One of the things that is interesting about doing these different genres or working with films or commercials, you get a different type of client with each job, which I quite like. Obviously, with a film, you do get more time. Now, I normally want 10 days to grade a feature.
And that's pretty quick.
I don't think you can do justice. I mean, I'm not talking, you know, Hollywood or big budget features. I'm talking about your typical, you know, $2 million, call it an indie feature maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's certain standards, and you sure, you could rip through something in a few days, but it's not going to look any good.
No.
You need to take time, break the scenes down, look at how the grading can help the story. You're there to help the flow of the story, as well as balance cameras. Create looks if you need them. You don't necessarily need to do that. It just depends. But you need to step back from it each evening, come back with fresh eyes, maybe change things, revisit scenes. Whereas commercial tends to be a lot more, you know, full on. We get our looks sort of on the table early on. We apply these looks to other key shots. Pack shots are obviously very important.
Oh, definitely.
And we have a lot more people probably in the room that have to say yay or nay to what we're doing. So it's a very different way that you work in terms of probably how you present yourself as well as a person in front of these people and how you deliver these grades, as you'd know here, working here, smoke and mirrors, you know, it's full on commercial stuff. But I enjoy the challenges of both because they're really, you know, really quite different in terms of what you're doing. You're throwing more layers or nodes or effects in your grading, probably in certainly in the commercials, than you are in features, where a lot of the time the primary grade is the base of what you're doing, and you may not do too much more in terms of, you know, lots of windows or keys in a movie.
Just speaking of the kind of difficulties, do you find it hard to let go? Do you know when you've spent 10 days on a feature, do you go, can I just have a day to fix this up or change this?
Yeah, but I think your clients do as well. I mean, I recently worked on a feature in Australia, and obviously you've got to think that the clients have lived with their images or their storyboards a lot longer than we have. And they've had it in their idea that since they've had a board, it's going to be beautiful sunshine on a beach, everything's going to be perfect in their actors and their talent. They've got this vision. And I was trying to make this beautiful vision out of rainy, wet, red, not lit so well footage on a beach in Australia that has looked magnificent. And I think we got pretty, and it looked good, and I was pleased. But I could see that they were just thinking, is this it? Do I really have to say this is where it is? And we went round and we did different things. I said, this is, you know, it's going to match this. It's going to work. And they find it hard to let go. But when they finally do, and they've seen it in many screens around, and they're really pleased. But you can see they don't want to let go.
No,
they're very attached. And there's times when I think, well, you know, we could all do more. I could revisit lots of things. Sometimes I will revisit and fix things up. Sometimes you look through and you do not even change your reel when you review it. Very different.
That's always a good thing when they come in.
I do like it when you actually review a reel and they don't change one thing and they go, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, I had that recently and I was shocked. I was like, would you like to watch it again?
Yeah.
I mean, do you have any advice when you're dealing with difficult clients? One of my most difficult was when the producer and the director couldn't agree between themselves. So yeah, there was a two-way argument going on between them, and then I was trying to lead them.
Yeah.
So I think that's another set of skills that you have to develop as a colorist, is to control the room.
Yes.
That some of the guys can go in and say, this is what you want to do, and the clients just accept it, where if you're a younger colorist, or, you know, you're getting into it, you might just accept what they say. And I actually got, in my first job, I had a client that walked out of the room and said, I don't want to work with him ever again. And my boss was really annoyed, like, why? Oh, he just did what I said. So I think you really need to give the clients a reason to come use you again.
Yeah.
But is there any advice you'd have on that side of things?
No, the politics can be a little bit difficult. And, you know, you are there primarily to, you know, work for the director. You know, what the director wants is what we're trying to put on the screen, pretty much like everyone else in your crew. But you can have agency people there will offer, yeah, can we do this? Now, I will always show them something. You know, the director might go, no, that will never work. And I'd sort of say, well, yeah, we'll just have a little look and we'll try this look. And I'll say, well, there's the one we want. Personally, I maybe think this works better the way we had it, or just change it slightly and that works better. You know, I will fight something a little bit, but at the end of the day, your clients are paying your bills. You know, you can't stand your ground too much. And I've been there before, standing my ground with the director, and the end of the day, the agency guys have got what they want. You know, so you know when to fight a little battle, or to give up on something, or give way on something. But at the end of the day, we're all trying to get the same goal. We're trying to get something graded nicely and finished and get out the door.
Yeah, get home.
So we can go stand in the rain drinking beer inside.
Exactly, yeah. Would you have any films that you'd reference at the moment? I mean, I kind of keep a bank of stills for skin tones.
Yes.
Certain still, you know, you'd have your cold, your warm, your matrix, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you have any films you'd recommend at the moment? Not even necessarily the best graded, but the ones that you hear the most.
Yeah.
You know, the clients come in and they say, hey, Warren, make it look like this.
Yes. I mean, obviously, people want things like Bleach Bypass, where you reference Evita or Fight Club and things like that, Saving Private Ryan. Obviously, The Matrix gets a rap as the green look, or the Transformers for the orange and teal look, those classics. And I think as a grader, it's good to have references or just tuck the trailers away somewhere that you can revisit. So if someone says to you, you know, did you see that look? Do you like that? Keep up with trends on what things have been shot on and who's been shooting what. So you've got a knowledge of what is around. And as a person or as a grader, as a creative person, know what you like yourself. Have a strong effect. So if you like some of these, we're seeing a trend of maybe commercials now that are a lot flatter in terms of their look and contrast than we've seen for a long time.
I'm guilty. I've naturally moved to lower contrast. I used to be very gritty for like a whole year. Everything I did was quite crushed, quite desaturated. Yeah. And now I'm going, I think the only way to describe it is the kind of Instagram generation.
Yeah.
Where people want lower contrast.
Oh, yeah.
So I tend to lift the midtones a lot.
Yes.
And then just use the black, kind of the lift to control it. Mm. But I'm very guilty of that.
Yeah,
and I guess it could be a commercial thing as well.
Not necessarily guilty, and I'm one for let's see the detail. Let's not crush away our set design. You know, we're sitting here, you know, in this reception here, and we've got beautiful detail in sofas and furniture, and we don't want to lose that. And I know probably 10 years ago we were taking all that down, and it would all be gone.
Yeah.
And we'd have a window would be gone, and that was the sort of look that a lot of people were going for. But I think some of these have really have a log type look of them. Some of these ads, they look like they haven't been graded.
I've seen a couple. I mean, there was a particular ad I seen where I was 100% sure it was out of the camera, where it was just straight out of the camera, maybe cut on a home machine and then just straight on air. I mean, I guess you get away with that now that you don't have the strict delivery standards that you had.
Yeah.
You know, even three or four years ago when everything had to go to tape.
Again, it's a difficult one. It's a subjective thing. If that flat image cuts perfectly through that ad and it is all the same, then technically there's nothing wrong with it. Creatively, you might go, it doesn't look right, but that's what they want.
Yeah.
One thing I have noticed, there's a buddy of mine down in Australia who works at the top, probably QC house as a colourist. He does a lot of archive there, but they do a lot of QCing of dramas and all sorts of shows that comes to them, short films, even smaller ads, and they QC them, give them a report. Their tech guys have seen a big increase of not necessarily technical problems, but just shots that just don't match.
Okay.
They just don't, a wide shot just does not match. Now, I've always said, well, you know, color correction is a bit subjective. So you can get away with things, but when shots don't match, that is wrong.
Yeah.
All right. And before, you know, if you went to the post house with your colorist, it was traditional, he had his monitor, you knew he could get through your show and it would match.
Yeah.
He may not give it the greatest, funkiest look in the world. Some would, some wouldn't, but you knew it'd match. You went there, they could match a show. That's what they did. Now I think because people are maybe grading things in maybe their own places or smaller places, they haven't learned the actual art of matching shots.
Yeah, that's a bit of advice I got as well, is once you've finished your grade, pop on the waveform or the parade and just watch the black level.
Mm.
Just watch the whole thing through, and you should aim for a consistent black level and then do the same with the highlights, which is something I was probably a little bit weak on as well.
Yeah, I think people talk about external scopes and that you've got to have a set of good external scopes and waveforms in your room, and obviously your monitor has to be, you know, a well-calibrated monitor of a certain standard. And the other thing is, you know it well. You know the monitor. You know where maybe it has a deficiency or somewhere, but if you know where that is, then you are going to have confidence. You must have confidence. So when a director says, well, what will it look like on a plasma? What will it look like in a cinema or wherever? If you can say, yeah, I've set this monitor up, it's right. And if you're not sure, that will come out straight away. You'll go, oh yeah, well, I did see something that didn't look so. You're gone.
Yeah.
Straight away, aren't you?
Yeah. And once you lose their confidence,
see,
then.
You see the they see you and go, oh yeah, it is not too. You're gone. They'll be putting it on their laptop and sending it to their mates and.
Yeah. What do you think? What do you think?
What do you think of this? Is this right? No good.
That's a pretty good question when it comes to grading for the web, which I know a lot of people will be doing now.
Yeah.
What would you do? Do you look at it on an iPad, which I've seen recently, but guys were saying it's pretty good?
I leave it all set in Rec 709, which is very close to like SRGB.
Yeah, it's very, very close.
Very close, and I don't get in that chase your tail of start looking at things. I've got my monitor in 709,
yeah.
Grey to that, and...
It is a standard,
yeah. It is a standard, and you have to have a standard. If we started going, well, here's a look, and I could flick out a little quick time, stick it on an iPad, and pass it around the back of the room...
Yeah, you're going to get yourself in trouble.
I mean, and they might then go, oh, I can just email it to somebody in the office.
Would you take on a cinema job then? Because a lot of people are getting quite into the P3 colour space.
Yes.
I mean, I've done a couple of features, and I did them in 709, and just did the conversion afterwards.
Yes.
Which was good in a way, because it worked on my monitor and it was cheap, but I guess I didn't take the full advantage of it.
No.
I mean... Have you done any feature work?
No, I did a feature I graded it on a monitor in 709. That was the movie I was talking about earlier, The Beach, that had to look fantastic and sunny,
okay,
and it was all kids. And we graded it on a monitor because the primary delivery requirement was TV HD, a DVD release for the US, but there is a digital cinema requirement as well. But we graded in 709 and we took it to the theatre in Digital Pictures down in Melbourne. And I was a bit nervous. I must admit, I was nervous when we went there. So we picked these scenes and I said, I want to take the clients. We want to go and sit down. And it's like you sit down and you think, and I was not sure what we were going to get here. But they put it through their little lookup, whatever they do to get from 709 into P3. I might look really good.
Okay, so
I was
good.
Pleasantly surprised because I thought, well, the next scene's coming up, that's going to be the dark one. This one was the one where we pushed a bit of goldy yellow, could be a problem. No, good.
All good?
A lot of secondary keys on oceans, bringing up blues and skin, no, good. So it worked really well. I would say we're talking about a lower level indie type movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the way to go.
Yeah, I mean... A lot of people looking at forums get very worried about colour spaces and things like that. I think it's mainly a confidence issue where they're about to put their name on the line and they want to reassure themselves. But I think I've done 709 for cinema, you've done it, so I think it's a safe option, hopefully.
It is a safer option because if you want to start going and trying to calibrate stuff and maybe getting your monitor close to P3 that can't do P3...
It's almost probably a bigger mistake because you could end up in a no colour space, or at least if you get 100% 709, you can convert
know
it.
When, or if they're making, the guys are making the DC, but it's not you, if they know, that is what it was graded on, it's a set standard.
They can make it work.
Trying to do something in between. And the interesting thing now is because film print is more or less nearly gone.
It's pretty bad, yeah.
For years, it was our primary objective that we must get it right for the film out. If you look at it though, what made more money, it was probably the DVD or the TV release.
Yeah.
But the film out was our objective, so we were going through lookup tables, we were going through lookup, doing film out tests, getting it perfect for that film out.
For those 3 weeks it was in the cinema.
For the premiere of the movie where, we sat down with all the important people looking at it for film print.
True.
That is starting to come back now, which then that opens this playing field out a lot more because you don't need that lab involvement because the labs had so much power in that workflow for films. People say to me, where do I stand on the whole film v digital thing? And I still think that has a place. I'd still say in terms of balancing, if you had a bit of 35mm shot nicely on a good day, there's nothing to beat that grading wise.
Still top dog.
It just sits so nicely. It has some sort of organic feel to it that's quite hard to explain. The F65 I like.
Really?
Balances very nicely.
Okay.
It has a certain quality. Alexa to an extent as well. Just tracks. You add contrast to it. And it sort of starts to just contrast and the depth of it fits into place.
Yeah.
I find with a lot of digital where they're building the depth back in. Whereas in film, you never did, even 16mm, you didn't do that. It just sat nicely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's hard, a little bit hard to explain, but balanced very well.
I'm coming from a completely different side of things. I started on digital, and then when I started here, I started scanning film again and grading a little bit. So it's an interesting thing. I think the number one shock for people like me is the noise. that we're so used to no noise in a picture that when you do get 16, but I think I've learned to embrace it. Don't mess with the noise. Just go with it.
yeah. It was a different thing. I know that. It's changed. We had a box that took out grain. It cost like $200,000 just for the box that took out grain. And if you're talking commercials, SD wasn't so bad. When we moved to HD, you're seeing better quality in your pictures, but you're also seeing more noise, more grain, more everything.
More skin tone that needs fixing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Have you gone down the road of 3D yet?
I've played with 3D, but I haven't done any, actually haven't done any proper jobs on 3D.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. I'm ready for it, but in reality, it's not going to hit us too soon, I think.
No, the thing that, obviously, in Australia, the bigger jobs tend to be 3D, tend to be handled by the post houses, handled by the guys who are in the staff jobs.
Yeah, true.
And they want to do these bigger jobs. They're unlikely to pull in a freelancer to do that. But I'm sort of interested in maybe the hiring corporate car mobs that want 3D.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
You know, the commercial side of things, whether they actually want to shoot stereo rather than maybe post-produce a 2D to 3D thing, I don't know. But it sort of interests me. But I must admit, every time I have had the glasses on, whatever form playing around, I always feel a slight little bit of strangeness afterwards.
As in physically,
I always feel a bit strange, a bit. We did last week during the class. We had some 3D stuff, and we were mucking around just with anaglyph. And maybe it's me. Maybe I'm one of those 20% that watching and feel strange.
I actually developed a technique for 3D that when I do my first pass, I do anaglyph with no glasses on, just and line it up visually. Just otherwise, your head will fall off.
Yeah.
I found I got my first stereo job in, and my glasses were on straight away, and I was like, right, let's go. And I had to stop after an hour. My eyes were just pounding, I think there's definitely a technique for 3D.
Yeah,
and it's very 2D based.
Jeff Ohm gave me a tip. He's a guy who works with ICA in LA. He works for DreamWorks, done a lot of big stereo jobs.
Yeah, they're very.
The first big one he did, I think, Journey to the Center of the Earth. He said, biggest tip, he said, have a big tub of Nurofen right next to your console.
Oh man. Okay, so what is coming up at the moment for you, and the big coming up in the next year?
I'm going back to Australia next week to work on two pretty big commercials, a couple of network commercials, which is good fun at two different shops. I do stuff out my home place, but these are two other post houses in Brisbane, which is good. I freelance there. And then there's talk of a movie later on in the year for the same guys that I did this beach movie that I'm working with. So it's good that, you know, it's always good that clients you've worked with before want to come back and do more stuff with you. So I'm looking forward to doing that. But again, a good variety of things. There's a few music videos, and a few of my directors that I work with are doing some fashion. Fashion guys are shooting stills and moving into movies and looking to explore the things that they can do. And the good thing is that they're still seeing the value in going somewhere fresh and getting a colorist to give a real fresh look on things, rather than maybe getting their editor to grade it or them doing it themselves. Everyone can access the tools, but you know, we go to a colorist because they're looking at it fresh. And why don't we do this? And I think we should do that. And let's just bend a mid-tone through there with a curve. And the biggest compliment, and I say this in this class, is that if you get change a director's thought on how a shot could be, because again, they've lived with the balls, they know, and if they can go, well, actually, I hadn't quite thought it could work like that, I really like it. And that's how you start to build relationships, because they go, oh, that guy's free, we'll go there. And that's how you start to build your client base. How about you? What are you doing next?
Music videos. That's my new bag. Lots of promos. So, any up and coming director?
You too, and Coldplay. Bands like that.
No, I've done a couple of good ones. Definitely not on your league, though. So.
Hey man. Well, thanks for chatting. Should we go and have a beer? Is it stopped raining?
I think it's time to go back to the pub.
All right. Cool.
Cool. Thanks for coming on. I'm sure people appreciate your advice.
Thank you.
Thanks, dude.
Thanks for listening to today's Mixing Light podcast. As a subscriber to the Mixing Light launch newsletter, over the next few weeks, we'll be in touch with information on the launch and more exclusive content. Be sure to tell your friends about Mixing Light and have them visit mixinglight.com to sign up. For more information on Warren and the International Colorist Academy, please visit icolorist.com. On behalf of Patrick Inhofer and Dan Moran, I'm Robbie Carmen. Thanks for listening.